Super real.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, I'm Julian Morgans, and you're listening to What It Was Like, the show that asks people who have lived through big, dramatic events what it was like. So I was watching a Brad Pitt movie the other day. You might have seen this one. It's called Legends of the Fall, and it's kind of one of his earlier ones. As a film, it's okay. But the thing that stuck with me was Brad Pitt. I just couldn't stop looking at him. And I think he appears in this movie. He's probably in his late 20s, and he's just so good looking that it's like, it's almost a bit freaky. Like, he has this effect where he stands in a room or he stands with the other cast members, and they all end up looking just a bit gray and two-dimensional because Brad's just so electrifyingly, aggressively handsome. And I got thinking, like, okay, this guy, Brad Pitt, his name is, it's almost like a trademark for male hotness. It's like he's almost he's a human cliche in many ways. But there was a time when he wasn't like that. There was a time when he was living in Missouri with his Christian family and he was studying journalism at the University of Missouri, and he decided to drop out and he moved to Hollywood. And this is the bit that I'm interested in, because I want to know, was Brad Pitt always so visually mesmerizing that his success was assured? Like, when he got to LA, were casting directors just like, yeah, sure, you can be in a movie, any movie you want, just choose the movie? Or did Brad have to work at it like everyone else? I guess, really, this to me is a broader question around, to what degree can appearance for a person in life be a superpower? Basically, I see this as a conversation around this thing that we call an X factor. And I want to know, do massive stars like Brad Pitt just have it? Are they just born with it? Or do they have to cultivate it? Is it a learned skill, just like any other learned skill? So I tracked down the casting director who originally discovered Brad Pitt, and this is exactly what we talked about. Her name's Lauren Lloyd, and through her career, she's discovered all sorts of huge stars. Jessica Alba, Scarlett Johansson, Tom Green, Heath Ledger, Christina Ricci, and countless others. She was the executive vice president at Hollywood Pictures for a bunch of years. She had the same role at TriStar Sony Pictures Entertainment. But back in the mid-80s, she was co-running her own casting agency. And one day, she met a kid named William Bradley Pitt, and this is where our story starts. So I give you Lauren Lloyd. Lauren, thanks for coming on the show.
I'm happy to be here. I'm happy you found me.
Great. Well, I'm happy you found Brad Pitt.
Me too.
Let's start with how you became a casting director in Hollywood.
So I would, you know, for my family, like, I would put on little dances or just little shows where I was always telling stories. And then I ended up, I was lucky enough. I grew up in Mount Lebanon, right outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And I was lucky enough to have a theater at the high school there that was so involved. It was very advanced. And I became very enamored of the theater and my desire to have my big face up on that screen, you know, as an actor. And then I realized, oh, no, not acting, not directing. And then, of course, I started in casting and then ended up producing. But no, I wasn't always like, ooh, that's a pretty face. But I was very interested in theater. My family took me to the local, like, Pittsburgh Playhouse. And I loved that. I couldn't believe those people were up there doing that stuff. I was interested, I guess, in getting attention and telling stories. I think that's... And I couldn't believe I got into Carnegie Mellon. It was unreal. And so I was like, well, this is what I'm doing. And I love it. I loved it. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, all right. So you graduated from Carnegie Mellon, and you moved to Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And in the mid-80s, you know, describe your career. Was it easy? Was it hard? Were you kind of starting up?
Oh, I had a very specific plan. Everything I do has a very specific, unusual plan. This one was, I didn't know anyone, okay? So I thought, well, people, how do I meet successful people in Hollywood? I thought, well, they drive nice cars, so I'll sell cars. And so I did. I walked down to Room and BMW, which was about almost a mile away from my little hut that I was in my little apartment. I walked down every day and I was like, hi guys, I'd like to sell your BMWs. And they would say, but you're a girl. And I would say, yes. And then I'd walk down the next day and say, hey, I'm here to sell cars. I did it for maybe 20 days and I finally would bring them lunch. And then they all laughed and they said, okay, the next person that comes in, you sell them a car. And I said, yeah. And I did. And I sold a little, you know, 320, a little BMW. And that person became my business manager, and we had a great, you know, success together. His name's Harley Newman, actually. He's maybe the biggest business manager in Hollywood today. Oh, so I discovered him.
He was selling cars. I was selling cars.
It's a crazy story.
Unorthodox way of breaking into Hollywood.
Well, all of my stories are like, wait, and then what happened? And so then my dad died, right? And I knew I was going to go back to Pennsylvania to attend that. And I met a guy, Chris Barrett, who was an agent at, I think the Gage Group. And I knew he was going to buy a car, but I wasn't going to be there to deliver it to him, to sell it to him. So I gave him the prices of what we spend on cars, which is very, you know, illegal or something, because I knew he would be indebted to me that I've given him this great offer. And he said, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to get in there. I want to get in the business. And he said, well, I have a friend, Linda Francis, who has since passed, who's looking for a casting assistant. And I was like, oh, certainly. Yes, I'm very good at that. And so he introduced me to Linda Francis, and I said, what kind of a car do you drive? She said, a Peugeot. And I thought, if nothing comes out of this, I'll sell her a BMW.
And okay, good. Upgrade.
And she hired me, which was, I agree. So that's literally how I got in there. And
Okay. All right. So I guess when Brad Pitt drove into town, you were working for Linda?
No. By then I had been fired because I was fired a lot. I understand how to do this. So I found, in my opinion, who was also a friend of mine, Gail Levin, who I thought had the most exquisite eye. When I say that, what I mean is not only can she see, you know, talent like a Brad Pitt, of course, but the nuances of different characters and how you cast a movie to weave that fabric of talent and energy and faces together. She was just crazy good at it. So I said, you know what? And she was working for Wally Nassida, who then became my producing partner. And I was like, Gail, we have to do this. And she was like, oh, okay. So we took every job we could. And one of them was The Dark Side of the Sun. Yeah. So, and we were beginners at it. Yeah. But we took every job. So we were working like crazy, like you, 11 o'clock at night. There you are working.
Yeah, here I am working. This is pleasure. This is not work for me. So you guys, you ran a business together. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was your business. Mm-hmm. The two of you,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So you were kind of in startup mode at this point. Like it's fair to say that you didn't have heaps of money.
Nothing.
Okay. So imagining kind of a bit of a shabby office, you know,
No
office. All right. Okay. So you've set a great scene. Tell me about the day that Brad Pitt walked into your non-office.
Okay, well, by then, see, we ourselves didn't have an office. We would go from office to office. And I'll just set up the scene just a little bit.
Yeah, please.
From Yugoslavia, we got the script, Dark Side of the Sun, and we're like, are they paying? You know, who do we have to cast? Just the lead? Okay. So we met the three men who... their names were Yuri, Yuri, and Yuri, as I remember. I know that must be their nicknames, because as I look back, it wasn't Yuri. Anyway, and they were very interesting, because there was a slight language barrier, but when in the beginning, I would say, like, good morning, would you like some coffee? And they'd be like, brandy. And I'd be like, oh, we have to serve them brandy. Okay, I'll go out and get some brandy. Anyway, so we met people, and it was hard to get exactly what they were looking for, because it's like a man who wears leather in the day because his skin is too sensitive to the sun. It was kind of a preposterous idea. Anyway, we're meeting people.
This is the plot, by the way. It's about a guy who can't go out in the sun because his skin's really delicate, and he has to, travel to Serbia or some...
Something. Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah, all right.
So this kid walks in, you know, Brad Pitt, and I think he had done maybe one or two episodes in a soap opera. And he came in, and he was what? You know, I was like, who's this kid? And he had like shaggy hair, and he was kind of slight, but it was like God walking in. I was like, what? Sit down and talk to me. He had kind of bad skin a little bit, and he seemed very calm for being so young. And so, I guess non-experienced. So we read him, and he kind of threw the script down, and he said, like that? You know, because we had read, and I said, yes, exactly. Like that. Will you hold for a second, please? So Gail and I walk out, and we're giggling with delight. We're like, who is he? This guy is magnificent. And then I got a little weird. And I said, yeah, but he just does TV. Because by then we were, at that stage, the people in the movie business, we were very, we looked down upon television, can I say.
Right.
They were making all the money, but we were making the movies.
Yeah,
and so I remember I said to Gail, yeah, but he's a TV actor, you know, and this is a movie. And she said, Lauren, he's a goddamn movie star. And I said, I know. So we said, let's hire him. And we were giggling, and we brought him in to meet the three Yuris. And he read for them, and they were like, yes, yes, let's do it. And Brad was so excited. He was like a kid.
Maybe how old was he at that
21
time?
Or 22.
Okay.
And that's awfully young for someone to be so united inside. When I say that, I mean there's someone so young to be comfortable in their body, okay? Mm. So to be intellectually there. So it's kind of a spiritual, intellectual, physical. It's a blending of all that. And there he was. And he was magnificent looking. So When someone like that walks into a room, you know, you see them, but you feel them. It's almost like every cell in your body is electrified. Does that make sense at all?
It does. I mean, all right. I mean, obviously, this is one of the things I want to explore with you. So let's freeze frame this, right? You've got Brad Pitt auditioning for you. Mm-hmm. And you look at him. I mean, you said before that it was he looked like God had just walked in, right? So obviously he looked good then. Even back then, at the age of 21, he looked incredible, right?
Yeah. Well, he had kind of like shaggy hair and kind of bad skin, but still, you're like, what is going on there? You're captivated by it. So I wouldn't say he was almost too pretty. He had very delicate features. He's grown into a much more kind of manly man. He was just quite a beautiful creature.
Right. Okay, sure.
Yeah.
But I think something I find interesting is, like, this is, he looks this way just because this was the role of the genetic dice that
exactly.
his parents gave him. Okay. Mm-hmm. But then there's this whole other element about mm-hmm. body language, about intelligence, about self-belief. I mean, have you in your career found people who are incredibly beautiful like Brad Pitt but don't have the other stuff, or maybe vice versa, where, you know, they have the self-belief but don't have the looks?
Oh, okay. So let me unpack that for a second. So
yeah.
The belief, when you're in that position, when you go to Hollywood, you have to have that belief no matter what you do. So I want to kind of put that aside. If you don't have that drive because it's so difficult, it's in you. If you don't do it, you'll perish in a way. That's literally what you have to come to Hollywood with. You have to be so driven that no matter how many times you get no, you will find a way. And he had that. And so if you're on that trek, you have to have that. So yes, he had it, and here he was, you know, in the room. there's a variety of things. Like, yes, he was blessed with an incredible combination of genes, and he looks magnificent. So there's something about just the person who has that, we'll call it movie star quality, versus someone who's just charismatic, you know, someone who, because you can learn some of that. You can learn eye contact, open body, you know, focus your energy, smile, ask questions. That can lead to charisma.
Yeah.
But then you've got actors who you're like, okay, well, they look okay. And then when they get in front of the camera, you're like, whoa, because there's that magic between the face and the persona of that person and the camera. Like Demi Moore, for instance, I've made a lot of movies with her. And I love her. I think she's lovely. And when you see her, she's just like, she's not like, oh my God, you're the most beautiful thing. But when she gets in front of a camera, whatever that magic is between the two, she's electric. And I don't know how to explain that. And I also don't know how to explain when you're meeting someone, will that happen when they get in front of the camera? And so let's see here. Also, like, let's take Kim Kardashian. You know, I see her photos or see her in whatever, the red carpet. And I think, okay, well, everyone loves her. But when you see her in person and you experience her being, it's magnificent.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you're still talking about it, though, like you're using words around like magic and like these are sort of nebulous kind of dark black magic kind of words. Like you're in a profession where you need to understand this stuff on a very scientific, in a scientific framework.
Yeah? You have to feel it. That's what I believe. And that's where it gets a little bit.
What does it feel like? How do you know?
It feels, you're interested. I'll tell you, you know within 10 seconds of someone walking into a room, whether this person is interesting or not. You know it. We all know it. Do you know?
Yeah.
But you're in a professional situation where, you know, you're supposed to be receiving or receptive as a casting director to what they have to offer. I mean, just to put it in a casting director's point of view, everybody that walks into the room, you hope they're that one that you want for that part, you know? And
yes.
So you're as excited. So when someone walks into a room and you cannot take your eyes off them, or you feel it's, okay, well, you know something, it's almost like butterflies. Is that safe to say? You know, when you fall in love, you get a feeling of exaltation or something. It's not so much what you see, because we're always taught, are they beautiful? Are they thin? Are they tall? Is their hair blonde? It's what you don't see and what you feel. It's your instinct. And that is a very hard thing to describe. But I think you can liken it to somebody who you are like, I don't know. I looked at that person and I felt a certain surge of energy.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it does. I want to know, do you think there's a parallel universe in which Brad Pitt never became a movie star? Is it possible to look like that and yet not succeed?
Well, I would imagine because he has that charisma and that he would have succeeded at anything he wanted to do. He could have been a politician and, you know, because he has whatever that magic is, whatever that thing is that people want to be around him. They want to be him. They want to be with him. They want to sleep with him. They want to somehow get that magic. And so wherever he goes, people will feel that. So I would assume that whatever he wanted to do, he could do.
Did he know this? I mean, you describe it like it's a superpower. Did he know that he had a superpower?
Not then. No. But you know what was so sweet about him that I was like, oh, yeah, this kid's going to go on, was that he doesn't think he has a superpower. He was like presenting who he was and very hopeful that he would get what he wanted, which was the role. He had no arrogance. He had no pretense. He came in very much like a little, I was going to say a shaggy puppy. He came right in and was just like, this is what I do. Do you like me? Am I good? Did I do it? And so when you have that kind of humble or that idea that this is what I want to do, and I'm hoping I'm bringing what you need for me to be able to do what I want to do, which is act.
Yeah.
So he didn't have an arrogance about anything. How he looked, and then you see Brad and he takes his shirt off, and you're like, oh my God, he's magnificent. Do you know what I mean? Everything, he's just a beautiful human, physically.
Yeah. He's a sort of like if you wanted to give some aliens an example of what like the best of our species looks like this is the best we've got. Yeah. You know, like.
Chris Hemsworth is pretty great too, as far as the beauty, you know.
Yeah. He's your guy.
He's pretty
right?
hot.
He's from Australia. Yeah.
Yeah, he's your guy.
We're not friends, but hey, Chris, if you're listening,
come on over. We got.
I'm open to having a beer. All right. Look, let's take this back. So, you cast Brad Pitt in The Dark Side of the Sun, which is a fairly. I mean, I don't think it was released. It went straight to video or something.
Well, there's a crazy story about it because...
Tell me the story.
Well, I of course, didn't know what was going on. I mean, there was a war in Yugoslavia, right? Okay. And so they lost the footage. They lost the movie somewhere. After the war, they were able to bring it forth. This was 3 years before Thelma and Louise, by the way, before he did that part. And I remember I was at home and I was watching Hard Copy. Do you remember that show, Hard Copy? And I saw Brad Pitt, Dark Side of the Sun, and I saw the deal memo with Gail's signature and my signature. And I'm like, what's going on? He tried to buy it back. He tried to buy the film back after he became a star because it's like Thelma and Louise and then Dark Side of the Sun.
Right.
So, okay. But he, I don't believe, was successful. And it was released on video. So, yeah. Yeah,
okay,
it was
right.
Really weird timing. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so looking through his filmography, it seems as though the 80s was, I mean, it seems as though he went through the struggle that any Hollywood actor does. Like the first couple of years, you show up, I'll just quickly read some of the parts that he's got here listed on Wikipedia. So 1987. There's a show or movie here called Hunk, and he appears at Guy at Beach with Drink, No Way Out, Black Tie Party Guest, No Man's Land, Waiter, Less Than Zero, Party Goer, Preppy Guy at Fight. I mean, you know, he went through the usual rite of passage in Hollywood. I want to know, were you there as his manager at that time being like, I think, you know, our investment's going to work. This thing that we're creating together, it's going to pay off.
Well, I wasn't managing him.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a process in a way that happens in Hollywood. You know, it's usually the casting director that discovers someone first, and then they're all like, "Yeah, Brad Pitt," and we all talk. Okay. So there's a confidence level, excuse me, that grows within that community. Like, oh, I brought him in. He was a good reading. Bring him into the director. So there's an advancement in the network that presents him to directors. So when you look at the directors he worked with, they're all good directors and they're all good shows. So they saw something too.
Right.
They're like, He belongs in here somewhere. Just put him in there. Do you know what I mean? Because
got it. Yeah.
And the other thing with him, which is super interesting, is that he is so beautiful to look like and look at and on screen that you can't really put him in as a character because he's so handsome. So you have to wait for him to grow into the confidence level that he can lead a movie or take a big role. Does that make sense?
Ah, okay. All right. Sure. Yeah, it does.
So,
it does.
So you can see he worked with really good people. And then he got that spectacular role in Thelma and Louise.
Yes.
Was there something before that? I don't know.
Not really. That was definitely the big one.
And I mean, he took off like a rocket after that. And then the thing that we were like, what? In Hollywood was when he did, 7 years in Tibet?
Yeah.
And we were like, oh, wait, he is a serious actor. We thought he was just like a really handsome, talented guy with the shirt off. And we're like, oh, he's really an actor. You know what I mean?
Okay, we
were saying he's a movie star. He's saying, and I'm an actor. And it took us aback for a minute. We were like, okay, we'll prove it. And then he did. He's a very good, good actor, movie star.
He seems smart. Is he smart? Yeah.
Yeah, and he's very, he's also very laid back in a way, very mellow. He allows, I know this may sound weird, he allows things to kind of wash over him in the sense that, he's centered, yeah, and smart, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so before you were talking about this feeling, like this sort of X factor, how it affects you, how you know when you're in the presence of someone who's got it. Are you ever wrong? Have you been wrong?
No.
Never.
I'll tell you what, the answer would be no. But there's certain things that come, because when you discover someone, it's like, okay, you have to have a little luck, you have to make sure that the roles are there and your kind of roles. And no, the only thing that would have proved me wrong would have been if somebody went down the stony end of like drugs or alcohol, or they couldn't maintain the pressure of Hollywood.
Yeah, got it. Okay, mm-hmm. All right.
But no, I found a lot of people. I found Christina Ricci when she was 8 years old at a drugstore in Massachusetts.
Really?
You know?
Yeah. Like she was just buying something and you saw her from across the room.
I was like, who are you, you little rascal? I'm looking for Cher's daughter. And she was like, what? And the mom's like, Cher? So anyway, and she got that part. So,
and she wasn't an actor at the time. I mean, she was eight years old. So no.
Yeah, no.
She was just a kid.
Yes, and a genius. When we would shoot mermaids, her ability to remember lines and also her blocking, like on this line, you pass the fork here. She was incredible. She was really, really super intelligent and adorable. Yeah.
We're going to take a quick ad break here, and we'll be right back with more What It Was Like.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Lauren, you wield a lot of power.
Oh.
You know? How does that affect the relationships that you have with people around you?
Oh, well, that's an interesting question. When I went to Hollywood, I think this will answer your question. When I went to Hollywood, I was very clever, and I'm still clever, I think. But I was clever in the sense that I will figure a way how to get what I want. And I always did, like, you know, selling cars. You know, I knew that was going to, I don't know. Anyway, so I became very successful faster or sooner than my peers, okay? And that worried me because then I was like, well, you never really know who's your friend because literally in Hollywood, your friends, you don't really know anybody outside of work, which is kind of sad. You just know the people you work with because all you do is work and you want to get ahead. So you spend all your free time with the Hollywood people. So it's really all about opportunities. And you hope you find people that like you just for you. I remember when I bought my first house, I didn't want to invite anyone over because I thought they would say, well, who do you think you are? Does that sound weird? You know?
Yeah.
So then, yes, then after that, when I was producing like a whole bunch of stuff or I was, you know, running a studio or whatever, everywhere I go, I'd go to the dermatologist and she'd hand me, you know, headshots. And I'd be like, oh, nuts. So I didn't really, you know, I became a bit isolated and only really hung out with the people in the very beginning who knew me when, so to speak. But the thing that's also interesting is that I've moved here because I want to connect more with my family at this point in my life. And and I'll tell you, it's weird. It's okay. I don't know why I'm going down this road here, but it's hard to find friends here in Florida when they go like, well, what do you do? Well, I produce movies. And they're like, what? Do you know Brad Pitt or whoever? And I'm like, yeah. And they distance themselves. They don't. So I don't say that anymore. I just say like, you know, I'm just.
That's interesting. What do you mean that they distance themselves?
Like because they think. Well, yeah, they treat me in a different way. They treat me like I'm somehow special.
Like you're intimidating.
Yeah, because of who I know. Because they think that's so far away from them, which, you know, that Hollywood or whatever is so far away from them, and it is. And I'm pretty unassuming, so when I would be like, la, 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 and they just can't make out, like, wait, what are you doing here? And I'm just like, I'm just living here. You know, I'm still making movies, but I'm having trouble, you know, making that connection with people.
Yeah. Does it strike you as odd that, I mean, let's unpack celebrity for a moment. Like, in every generation has been obsessed with celebrity.
Yes.
It just seems to be a facet of our brains.
It's our royalty.
We, Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's our royalty. Yeah. Do you feel like you've peeked under that curtain enough that you've spent time with these people, that the allure isn't there, that it's a facade, that it's a mystique that is somehow transparent, you know?
That's interesting because it's changed so much. You know, years ago when we would see a star or an actor, you know, there they are, big face, big screen, you know, we weren't really seeing stuff on TV so much. And we were able to project our wishes and love and desires on them. And so they became very personal to us, you know? And so that's kind of, so we feel we personally kind of own it, but it's far away. It has changed because the intent back then was to keep celebrity distant and keep that magic. And PR companies, oh my gosh, you know, tons of money to keep their personal lives out of the business, you know? And then People Magazine, that seems very significant to me because it was peeking under the veil of what is a star? What is celebrity?
Yeah, yeah.
And so then little bits would come out and then that was controlled. But now it's so different because now everybody can be a star. Anyone can go on TikTok or Instagram and have these followers. And I went down that road, and I'll tell you about that in a second. And so it's more about the people knowing all about you as kind of a celebrity online. You know, I mean, and I think that actually Johnny Depp and the Amber Heard thing put a nail in the coffin of celebrity. I'll go into that in a second. But
that's interesting. Like, what do you mean? Like, too much dirty laundry. We saw it all.
Yeah. And that used to be sacred, like, you know, because we're all screwed up. You know, we all have like crazy secrets or whatever. I know you do, Julian. Yeah. and so when that became like the more dirt you can find, the more it was interesting, that celebrity case, because it was literally they were people talking about their relationship. They were not celebrities, you know. But then I think the social media pushed it in a way that was kind of anti-Amber, you know, which kind of put the Me Too movement back a bit. But so it became like a popularity thing. But I think it put an end to celebrity in the sense that they're people and they're as damaged or troubled as we are.
Yes. And as human as we are. I think that's the other thing is that on some level, subconsciously, we believe that these people are somehow like proto-human. But you know, they're not. Like you say, they're just as damaged, just as insecure. Yeah.
When we're kids and, you know, when we're playing in the playground or whatever, we know those kids that have that magic.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? All through our lives, we've seen that, and some of them become those celebrities. But we're geared toward, oh, why is that person, why does everyone crowd around that person? Why is that person so good at blah, blah, blah? So there's always people that we kind of admire, and then, you know, and then we project those personalities on this, our desire on them on the screen. So we're kind of primed to be drawn toward those magical people, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just a thought that's occurred to me. Have you ever seen someone who cultivated or sort of synthesized this magic? Like they weren't born with it, but they kind of just faked it.
You mean, are they the real deal or do they have talent or... Because there's a lot of stars that get roles and then... but they don't have, you know, great talent. I'm trying to think of... That'd be horrible to say.
I guess because you're talking about charisma, you're talking about this X factor as though it's essentially inherent to who you are. It's either you got it or you don't. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that I bet there's a lot of people, especially in Hollywood, who are busting their ass trying to cultivate this special thing within inside themselves. And surely I've got it. I can make it work. I can pull it out. Have you ever seen that happen?
Yeah. I would think that my instinct would go like, when they came in. There are a lot of actors that don't have that, but they are really good actors. You know what I mean? There's does that make sense? So they actually ride on the sense that they're becoming another character as opposed to, I've got this charisma, you know?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? I'm trying to think of somebody who, who's that Del Rio woman, that singer? What's her name again?
I'm the wrong person to ask.
Okay. Yes! Lana Del Rey.
Lana Del Rey, yeah.
Okay, yes.
I could have said that.
You could have. I couldn't have.
I could have.
Bob
yeah.
had to help me. She was somebody who I think kind of fabricated what she was all about, changed her looks, and but grew into kind of what she wanted to become. I don't even know if this is fair for me to even say this. You know what I mean? I'm not sure. Because she's a singer, and I don't really have a space.
I know what you mean, though. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, she certainly got a hell of a lot of, like, lip filler. And then, like...
Yeah, she changed... She became who she wanted to become. And then she started performing that way. I think that... maybe that's a good example. I don't know.
But certainly in the acting world, you haven't seen someone with average looks, with a sort of slumped body language, who is obviously a bit insecure, who you came back 5 years later and they'd flourished. You haven't seen that kind of thing before.
I don't know. I wish you'd asked me that question before, then I could have thought about it. I can't think of anything about that. I'm sorry.
That's all right. That's okay. Let's go back to your career. I want to know what finding Brad Pitt meant for you professionally.
Well, you know, I didn't look at it in a way that I didn't look at it in a way of like, oh, that's okay. Well, okay. I didn't look at it then as a casting director of like, oh, that's somehow currency for me. You know what I mean? I was super thrilled that I found this guy. There's a thrill in the creativity of finding someone and bringing them forth and going like, look at this guy.
Yeah.
And I did it with a lot of people, all right? And then I thought, I don't want to cast anymore. I want to do something that's more inclusive, you know? And so I thought, produce. And I specifically thought, I can do this because I know these actors. Okay, so I thought, oh, that was the first time I thought I could kind of rope those relationships in. And I went specifically to a casting director, Wally Nasita, and she was super. She discovered all the people that I had, like from Michelle Pfeiffer, Kevin Costner. She discovered like everybody else.
Okay.
And her husband was Rick Nasita, who was one of the founding members of CAA, Creative Artists. So I was like, we're going to know everybody. And so I approached her and, you know, she said, yeah, let's do it. And that really catapulted my career. She was, you know, kind of a decade older than I and had great relationships. And I was able to utilize them and kind of direct her as a heat-seeking missile. So, yeah, so that was the only time that I...
So what year was that? What year did you sort of get into production work?
Well, my first movie, Mermaids, was, I think we made it in the late, I think 89, is that when we made it? We shot it and it came out like in 90 or 88.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah, right. Okay. And then just take me across some of the other incredibly, really famous people that you discovered.
Well, I told you the Christina Ricci.
You did,
I was casting somebody, I think for Blake Edwards, and Taya Leone came in. From Boston.
Yeah, right.
And remember Taya? I mean, of course, she's... And she got one line. She was like the cute girl third from the left. Because when I saw her, I was like, oh, she's got magic. There's something completely different about her than every other woman that's come in. There was a naturalness, a very relaxed feeling. She wasn't trying to sell me who she was. She was just being there. I don't know how to describe that. Because I noticed back then, this is just a little side thing, that when I would audition young women, they would come in so clammed out, like hair and the lashes. And I'd be like, well, where are you in there? When I would audition a young man, he would come in like, I'd be like, did you just roll out of bed? And he was like, yeah, kind of. You know, their hair would be crazy. They slept in their clothes. But I found that much more able to connect to than all that preparation. So when Taya came in, she was just like, hey, it's me. Yeah, so she was good. I'm trying to think who else I... Jessica Alba's a good one.
Jessica Alba is a good one.
Yeah.
Tell me about Jessica.
I was an exec at, I think it was executive vice president at, was it TriStar or Sony? And I was doing a movie called Idle Hands, and it was, you know, a horror comedy, and I loved the script. So I was looking for a young woman, like 18, 19, who was sexually aware, let's say, someone who... but wasn't a predator, wasn't like, I'm going to get that guy. You know, somebody who was quite beautiful and very comfortable with who they were. And I met Jessica Alba, and I was like, bingo. I think she had done, I think, an episode of Flipper, I think, maybe in Australia. And she came in and read, and her reading was, you know, she was young. It wasn't great, so I worked with her, because I had to get the approval from the studio to cast her. My bosses. It was very interesting there. They were like, well, is she Caucasian? Is she black? I was like, she's everything. That's the point. She's everything because that's where we're going. We're all a melting pot. She's beautiful. She's fresh. She's sexy, attractive. She's our person. So I had to work with her again and again, and she got the part, you know, and then that would be another one I could have mined. She's what's that? Honest. She has a company. I forget what it's called. She's done very well. Jean Smart is somebody who I put in the first movie. Remember her? She's in Hacks. That's a series that's, I think she just got a couple of Emmys for it. But I saw her in a play, a tiny play called something at Bluefish Cove. And I was like, who's that woman? She's interesting. So she had like one line in a Goldie Hawn movie I cast. I think it was called Protocol.
Yeah.
And then Tom Green.
Oh, yeah, the comedian, like the MTV guy.
Yes. Well, he was doing some, like, crazy shit on the, you know, and these videos were circulating, and I was like, okay, I get it. He makes everybody really uncomfortable, and that's fun. Okay. So anyway, so I did that movie, Freddy Got Fingered, you know, which I couldn't believe we got away with that title.
That was a real hit amongst me and my buddies back in, I think, maybe like 2003.
So?
Yeah, we loved that.
Wasn't it funny?
Yeah, people to this day, they still go, backwards man, something, backwards man. You know, like
really?
Moments from that. Yeah. Yeah. And something like the bit where he's like jerking off the horse, like people still talk about that.
Yeah, that was pretty crazy.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy.
I have a new discovery.
Tell me. Who do you have?
Her name is Rain Spencer.
Okay.
And everyone's going to hear about her. She's, I don't know, maybe 20 years old. She's actually in that series, The Summer I Turned Pretty, for Amazon. And she also just came out in a movie, but she is the real deal. She's a magnificent actress, and you're just like, what is going on over there? Anyway, so she's great.
I'm going to keep an eye out for her.
Yeah, she is. She's real.
Okay, all right.
What else can I
tell
you?
Have you ever had, I mean, like, again, to my point, I said that you've got this kind of power. Have you ever considered or wondered if you could use it on yourself? Like, you described to me before when you were growing up, you had this interest in theater. You know, you had an interest in acting, but at a certain point, you abandoned that plan. You wanted to be a director, then you abandoned that plan and became a producer. Mm-hmm. Has it ever occurred to you that, like, you know the ropes, you know how the system works really well these days, mm-hmm. that you could potentially get yourself into directing? Perhaps you could even become an actress. You know, like, you suddenly have these abilities to do these things now. Like, why not?
Okay, so I did a little acting, and I was horrible.
Okay.
I'm admitting it. I cast a bunch of Dennis Hopper movies, and one was called Backtrack. It was with Jodie Foster, and I played her best friend, and I was not good in it.
Okay. So you watched it back, and you went, "This is not the career. It's not going to work."
No. Yeah, I don't want to act, and I really don't know how. I don't really have a director's eye. Yeah, and I'm not really drawn to that. I like producing. I like bringing the pieces together. I love developing the story.
Yeah.
That's what I love. I love finding new writers. I'm doing this new movie now. And the writer started writing the script when she was 17. And so, you know, wow. it's so fresh and new and young. And it's called Lavella. And I got a wonderful writer and a wonderful director. And I'm hoping Rain Spencer will be in it. That's my wish.
Yes. That's my wish. Yes, this is good. Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, all right. Well, something tells me that she will be in it. Mm-hmm. So give me a sense of what you're up to now. You're still producing. You're living between Florida and LA.
Yes.
Tell me about your life.
My life is much more about being active instead of reactive, because when you're in Hollywood or you're a studio exec or a casting person, you're reacting because everybody's coming to you with projects and ideas and thoughts. And so what I wanted to do was come here and settle into and just make the movies I want that are not going to be, and finance them, you know, myself with the people here in Florida. I don't want to be told, this is me, you know, as a child, I don't want to be told.
Yeah,
I don't want to be told who's right for this, what the budget has to be. I just don't want that anymore. I just want to make a beautiful movie and make all decisions based on what makes that movie better. Not like, oh, that person has, you know, 5 million followers. We must use her, him. I just want to make the most honest movie I can. So that's what I'm doing right now with this. It's a $1 million movie. It's called Lavella. Batsheva Guez is my director. Laurel Hasara is the writer, and I met her when she was 17. She's like 23 now.
Okay.
So that's what I'm doing. And I'm also in the process of, with Wally Nasita, making my very first movie, Mermaids, into a Broadway musical.
Yes. This
right?
sounds amazing. This sounds like a lot of fun.
I think so, too. It was a thought that came across. We were like, well, that movie is fun. Mothers, daughters, the music, and it seems that Sierra is interested in being involved. So that's, you know, we'll see how that goes. In a big way, in a bigger way, as far as just like, you know, writing music or helping, you know, producing whatever, and more of an overall. So those are the two things I'm focused on now. I'm really focused on. You know, when I was an executive, we'd have like 40 projects we're working on. And so I was never, you know, able to give each one the love. And so now I'm only doing projects that I absolutely love and that I will see to the end.
That's so a much better way to live.
It is. Thank you for that. It really is. You have a lot of time to think, though, too. Like, how you doing?
Yeah.
Like that. But, yeah.
You mentioned before
I do a podcast now, too.
Oh, tell me. What's your podcast?
It's called The Movies That Made Her But Not Me. And I'm doing it with the woman who created. Her name's Minna Stein. And she's also, like, 21 years old. I love working with these fresh creative ideas. Anyway, so it grew out of the fact that I would talk about movies and she'd talk about movies, and we never agreed because of generational differences. And so we thought, hey, that could be an interesting. That could be interesting. And so, but here's what I came to realize, because I bring up, like, you know, Annie Hall or Harold and Maude, movies that I think are magnificent from when I was
from the 70s.
Her movies that she brings forth, and the movies she's talking about, I was making movies. I think we let young women down with the movies we were making, because, you know, a lot of them are like animated movies or things that she just saw a different kind of, just different movies than what I saw when I was her age. So it's been super interesting. Yeah. The movies that made her, but not me.
All right. I'm gonna check that out. I'm going to subscribe. I'm going to leave you a positive review as well. I mean, the period that you are making movies and have been making movies, like, totally a lot of the period that I learned about movies, you know, the movies that calibrated my brain all through the 90s, you were making a bunch of those movies.
Yeah.
So I don't think you let us down at all. That was just
saying. Thank you.
Not at all.
Well, thank you.
You mentioned before that you'd spent some time going down this sort of like influencer route, you know, like casting people on the merit of their of their followers. What have you learned from that?
Thank you for circling back to that, because I did something in my always rebellious. I was so weirdly rebellious within the Hollywood scene, which I so coveted. You know, and it was a very, and so I was all like, I'm going to do something new. I'm going to do something online. And so I created this, and I knew nothing. This is just when YouTube was starting. It's called Big TV, or Big is Good TV. And my idea was, I'll fund it myself. I got cameras. I was giddy with freedom, you know. And so I started watching YouTube and online. And who are these people? Because I had makeup, you know, tutorials. I had all those things that you would expect back then. But I did a deep dive into, you know, you go on there and there would be 100 makeup tutorials. But why do some have a great following and others don't? So I started talking to those people, and I was like, what is it? What are they, what is coming across on screen that people are attaching to? So I learned a lot from someone named Candy Johnson, who was a huge, had huge following. I remember I found her when she had like 2,000, and now I don't know how many million. But when I watched her, she's beautiful, okay. But also, I asked her a lot, and a lot of these people, about their past. What? Because all of them say, I want to influence people. And I'd say, well, in what way? And it would always come back to, a lot of times, feeling bullied, or feeling left out, feeling traumatized, whatever created who they were, they wanted to give a message that everything's going to be okay. That's my opinion. And they did it through their tutorials, you know? And the people that could pick up a sense of, oh, she's there for me, or wellness, or he's there for me, I found those were the people that had more followers. So to me, it was how they were formed and what they really wanted to say. Because it's not like, well, I grew up because I want everyone to do a smoky eye, you know, makeup. I want to connect to people, and I want to tell them, I'm okay, you'll be okay.
Okay, and you believe that this is the through line between successful, specifically makeup tutorials, or is this sort of across the influencer?
Back then, now it's super different. Now it's like, if you can sing or do something clever, you're a star. That I don't understand as much. I can only say, speak to who had great big followings just based on, hi, I'm blah, blah, blah. I'm going to do, I'm going to teach you how to make this food. I'm going to teach you how to do this makeup. I'm going to teach you how to, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And so that's what I found. Yeah. But now I don't get it. I don't know. I don't know. I have no idea what makes people watch videos now.
Do you have TikTok on your phone?
I do not.
Okay. Yeah, see, I recently got into TikTok.
I'm a little nervous about that TikTok, that China malware. Is that what it is?
I don't know. Well, I thought about that too, and then I decided that I wasn't doing anything very interesting, or nothing that China would find very interesting. but it is, if you're interested in what makes mass audiences tick, it's an interesting place to explore, because you know, you're just getting fed these videos.
I have friends that say, well, I go on TikTok and I'm there for hours, you know, and I find that kind of intriguing but also frightening. I'm trying to cut down on the social media, because I don't want to be influenced by what's going on out there. I'd rather just have it come from within. But you know, I don't know how casting directors do it now. There's so many avenues to finding people. I used to go to, like, you know, the local mall and look for kids. You know what I mean? Like, there they were. That's a cute kid. And now there's the input. There are millions of people with input. It's confounding to me.
That aspect of your job I find so interesting, that you're just out there scouting for human beings who have got these very delicate, very specific little skills. And you know, could you give me any rough estimate at what percentage of the population, the general population, has the skills that you're looking for?
Skills, meaning the being, or that, because I have found kids that are very charismatic and lovely, and you're like, you feel connected to them, and they don't understand the concept of acting. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
So yes, that's the tricky part when you find someone interesting, but they're just laid out. They don't understand.
I'm talking about the full package. They look great. They move great. They can talk. They're engaging, and they can act.
Oh my God! Like one in a gazillion. You know, it's just so few. Yeah.
One in a gazillion. All right. Let's say that.
How about that?
Let's say that you said. Let's say that you said a million. Would that be about right?
No.
It's
I
even
think
less.
It's rarer than that. I mean, you look at there's tens of thousands of people, hopefuls, actors that come into Hollywood all the time. And I feel confident that if they had all of the pieces that we're looking for in a fine actor or a movie star, that they would somehow be found. Because, you know, everybody's hitting the streets looking for that talent, or they're going online to find that talent. So, you know, if you don't make it, then you probably weren't meant to.
See, now that's interesting. I think this gets at a much broader thing about like the American dream is this doctrine that says that you can make it. If you believe it, you can make it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're saying that actually there's this much greater degree of luck.
Well, I don't specifically believe in luck. You know, that's like, oh, that was luck. I believe that that the path will, how do you say this? I'll go with luck or with everything aligning. There are a lot of people, and I learned this when I was doing big TV, trying to find hosts. There's a lot of people that feel they have something to say.
Yeah.
But they don't. You know, okay. You're just like, you don't really have something to say.
Got it. Okay. But I mean, when I'm using the word luck, what I'm saying is luck in the sense that first of all, you're given the right genetics. You know, you got the full lips and the good cheekbones. But then on top of that, you're raised in a way that made you confident. You know, you can articulate yourself. You've just got the right package. And a lot of that just happens to be the family that you were born into, mm-hmm. the place that you happen to grow up in. Mm-hmm. So I think that's certainly luck.
Mm-hmm.
But then, all right. So there's this other thing that you just said that I think was really interesting. You're talking about how like there's enough people scouting that if you're good, you'll be found. Like cream always rises to the top. Yeah?
I believe that. I believe that you can be found, you know, if you've got something interesting to say. If, you know, there's a lot of casting people. There's a lot of agents. I think you can find your way. But, you know, it's not like I remember I was in a room with Wally Nacida when she first met Mickey Rourke. You know Mickey Rourke, yeah?
Like the wrestler?
I guess he's a wrestler. He was in, all right.
He was in a movie about wrestling.
He was a huge star back then. But when he came in the room, we were like, who's this weird guy? And he gave a reading, which was magnificent. He got the role. And I said, what have you been doing? He's just like, I've been, you know, selling some stuff down in Miami. So he had no acting, you know, he just showed up and he had some thing going on. And he's not a beauty, you know. So you meet people who have charisma or have magic that aren't always quite beautiful the way you see them. I remember when I first met Kevin Costner, he was a grip, and I was casting what was it? The thing with Michelle Pfeiffer and I forget the name of it. Anyway, and he came in to read with Michelle, and Lady Hawk, that was the name of it. And he read, and he was like, you know, I'm here with my friend. And he read, and I didn't even look at Michelle. I was like, who are you? And he said, you know, I'm Kevin. And I didn't think he was a handsome guy. I thought he was just like a I don't know. But he had talent. And so I remember that. Of course, Michelle got the job. But when he became a star, because I didn't cast him, Wally was the one who discovered him. People thought he was quite beautiful on screen. I thought he's like kind of an average looking guy, but he has, you know, charisma. So,
yeah.
You know, I don't know. It's
so you believe that there's no, like, it's a, This is going to sound a little crazy, but bear with me. Sure. So the story of Vincent van Gogh, right? He's sort of famous for never selling a painting, mm-hmm. even though these days he's revered as a genius. Mm-hmm. Is there, to your way of thinking, there's no sort of Vincent van Gogh equivalent walking in the streets of LA who's this undiscovered genius, because there are just, the system doesn't work like that. If you're good in LA, you get found.
I believe that. I do. I believe. I mean, you have to be very proactive. You have to, you know, you can't just, well, I don't know. Sometimes you're just at a party and someone's like, who are you? But yeah, you have to be proactive, get into, you know, different classes and study and make connections. But I believe that if you have something that's interesting, someone will find you. Am I just being silly?
No, you know, no, cause for optimism for thousands of people in LA.
yeah.
We're nearly running out of time here. I've got two more questions for you.
Yes, sir.
All right. So the first is, I want to know if you've kept in touch with Brad Pitt. Do you call him up, or does he call you up for Christmas? And he's like, hey, Lauren, I'm still famous. Thanks.
No, there are some people that do, like Jessica Alba will do that or what, you know. No, but we were neighbors for a long time, he and I, when he was with Jen Aniston, because I lived three doors down from her. So we would hang out a little bit. But no, because I don't think I ever worked with him. I don't think I ever worked with him again. Huh. So no.
But surely he's a, you know, like you're a big deal in his life. Like,
well, maybe. Do you know, sometimes
set this,
like,
you're a catalyst.
Well, that's true. I am. That's true. That's my job. I didn't know how to capitalize on that. I just, you know. And then everybody tries to claim that they, you know, whoever cast him in Thelma and Louise, they claim they found him. Do you know what I mean? So everybody wants a piece of, like, I found him. So, I don't know.
I said before that he's like a big corporation these days.
He is.
Yeah. He really is. He's Brad Pitt Proprietary Limited. He must have, like, if he died, there'd be probably dozens of people who'd have to find a new job.
Oh, yeah. You know something? That's a kind of a good idea. You know what? Maybe you've inspired me, Julian. Maybe I will send Brad my little movie and say, finance this. I found you. All right. I'm going to do that.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, I'm literally going to do it.
You know what? Yeah. If I was you, I would have done that for every movie for years.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, my brain just didn't think like that. It's bizarre. Huh. What's your other question?
Okay, my other question is this. All right, so you made it in Hollywood, right? Mm-hmm. You came from Pennsylvania. You went to California. Mm-hmm. You made it. Mm-hmm. Not only that, but you're in the business of helping other people make it. Mm-hmm. So tell me what you know about making it. And this doesn't necessarily mean just around movies. Maybe this is in life. Like, what do you know about making it in life?
What do I know about that? A couple of things. Persistence. That's really desire and then persistence. I think it's super important. Now, again, let me, before I go into that, it's a different world now as far as how you can make a living. And so I can only speak for, well, yeah, I guess this is for everybody. I think it's important to know what makes you happy. And that's like you take a quiet time and you figure out inside you, what's your purpose? What makes you happy? Is it, you know, so when you can figure that out. And if you have a goal, it's good to know what your goal is. You don't have to know how you're going to get there. Just keep your eyes on the goal and be persistent. Do you know what I mean? Because
like
you will get there.
Yeah.
You may not know how, because, you know, I showed up and I was like, I'm going to be something, you know, when I went into casting
cars
and all these. and you just kind of say, I'll take this job and I'll learn. Because I really didn't know what area I wanted to be in. But I was very, very persistent. You know, you just get fired a lot and blamed for a lot of stuff. And, you know, you get no. I mean, actors, they get, well, as a producer, you get 40, 50 no's, and then you get one little yes, you know? And so you keep going until you get that. Also, it's important, if you get a no, what was it about? Do you know what I mean? Right. Is it something that really matters? Is it just like it wasn't the right fit? And also, if you don't get whatever you get, this job you think that's going to change my life, it won't change your life if you don't get it. Do you know what I mean? Because you never had it. You just keep on going. Do you know what I mean? Each thing,
okay.
Each audition, each interview is an opportunity to meet someone. If you think of it on that level, it won't freak you out. Do you know what I mean?
I really like that. Yeah.
People come in and they meet you and they're terrified. And as a casting director, it's your job to make them feel comfortable, you know, so they can give you what they have to offer, you know. So persistence, desire.
I love that.
Yeah.
And desire. I really like that. Okay. Well, Lauren, this has been an absolute pleasure. Really.
Oh,
thank you
too.
So much for your time.
My pleasure.
Hey, just a reminder to check out Lauren's podcast. It's called The Movies That Made Her, But Not Me. And I've been listening since we recorded this interview, and it's funny and it's insightful, and you should absolutely check it out. And hey, if you've enjoyed this show, my show, What It Was Like, then you should definitely rate it. And you can do this on Spotify and Apple. Just look at your phone right now. Just pick it up and look at it and scroll down. And you'll see that there's this star system that allows you to leave a rating. And apparently, if we get lots of ratings, it'll boost the show in the rankings. And I just kind of want to try this out. So do it. I'll be eternally grateful. And if you think you've got a story that could work for What It Was Like, hit me up. I love to hear feedback. I'd love to hear your story ideas. I'm Julian Morgans on Instagram and Morgans Julian on Twitter. Today's episode was produced by Rachel Tuffery. It was edited and mixed by Jimmy Saunders, who also did our theme music. Our cover art is by Naomi Lee Beveridge, and this whole thing has been a Super Reel production.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.